Well, hello and welcome to the Informed Traveler Podcast, part of the Informed Traveler Radio Show, heard each week on Chorus Radio. It's a travel podcast where our goal is to help you become a more informed traveler. And I'm your host, Randy Sharman. So last week, we took a short road trip to Cranbrook, BC, staying at the St. Eugene Golf Resort and Casino. It's a beautiful resort located about 5 minutes outside of Cranbrook. And it was there that I met up with Sophie Pierre. She's a former chief of the Occam First Nation and board chair of the St. Eugene Golf Resort and Casino. Now, in case you didn't know, the St. Eugene Resort was once a residential school, of which Sophie was a former student. So I had a fascinating conversation with her about the First Nations in the area and the history behind the St. Eugene Resort and how it came to be what it is today. So we'll play that conversation for you in a few minutes. We also visited the Cranbrook History Center and did one of their three historic railway tours, the Trans-Canada. Our tour guide was Natalie Lim Picard, programming coordinator for the Cranbrook History Center, and we had a great conversation with her as well about the history of Cranbrook and visiting the center itself, so we'll play that for you a bit later. But as I mentioned, we're going to begin our podcast with a conversation we had with Sophie Pierre. She's a former chief of the Occam First Nation and board chair of the St. Eugene Golf Resort and Casino. Now, in case you didn't know, the St. Eugene Resort was once a residential school of which Sophie was a former student. So here's Sophie's story and the history behind the St. Eugene Resort and how it came to be what it is today. This is such a fascinating history behind this building and this area. Let's go back 100 plus years and just tell me the story of the First Nations in the area, what life was like, and then, you know, how this building transformed.
Sure. Yes, be happy to do that. Well, this is the homelands of the Iktunaxa Nation, Iktunaxa people. Iktunaxa have been here since time immemorial. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our history goes back thousands of years. And we are, as a Iktunaxa people, we have a language isolate. We are the only indigenous group that speaks Iktunaxa language. And we have our place names, and you know, we know our homelands primarily because we have our place names and our history around that. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the resort and the mission, this all started in the mid-1800s with the arrival of the missionaries. So yeah, in the mid-1800s, of course, it was the missionaries along with the traders and the fur traders and the other explorers as they're coming through. David Thompson came through this region, as did other explorers. But it was the Jesuits who created the mission. Mm-hmm. Here. Mm-hmm. And they built up a church and a hospital. And as the colonization moved west, mm-hmm. The Indian reserves were being created. 1884 was when our reserves were being created. Iktunaxa are in the Rocky Mountain Trench on both sides of the border of what's today the United States and Canada. We have Iktunaxa in Montana, Idaho, and Washington State, as well as in Southeast British Columbia. And our homelands go from the Big Bend of the Columbia. We follow the Columbia River, mm-hmm. Big Bend of the Columbia in the north, mm-hmm. along a place called Yakleke, along what is now known as the Arrow Lakes area, down into Idaho and down south to south of Missoula, Montana.
Oh wow.
That is the homelands of the Iktunaxa. Mm-hmm. And we know our homelands because those are where we have place names and we have stories, and we know we have a creation story actually that talks about this whole water system and the river system with the Kootenai and the Columbia rivers. So this is our homelands. And so with the arrival of the missionaries, and then behind them came the settlers, the reservations were created. And one of the reservations, my own, which is now Akam, it was known as the St. Mary's Indian Reserve. It's now Akam. Mm-hmm. And so it was created, or the mission, the reserve was set aside in 1884. But the majority of the people, they did not live right in this area. In fact, the area where our people did live, and our people were nomadic, so we used our entire homelands.
Mm-hmm.
But there were places where you came to specifically at different times of the year or at different years, was the area that is now Cranbrook. That was called Akiskapkleit, and it's because it's a very nice spot. It's right in between two creeks, and that's where the Akis, that means two, Akiskapkleit, so it's that area between the two creeks. And the settlers came in and, you know, recognized that that was a choice piece of land, and of course the reserves were being created, and you know, so we get the lands that, you know, quite frankly, settlers didn't want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where our reserve is now. So the mission was built, they started to build it around 1850, 1860, and in 1894, the Moye mines were being,
mm-hmm,
quote, discovered. The revenue from that mine,
mm-hmm,
given to the church, given to Father Kokla, and he built the church that we have here.
Okay.
And it was opened in 1897, and it actually has stained glass that was shipped here from Italy.
Oh my gosh.
So it is a fabulous, fabulous little church. The mission had started to be built around, and the original hospital, St. Eugene Hospital, was built down here, and then it was moved into Cranbrook.
Okay.
After it, when the town of Cranbrook was being developed,
mm-hmm,
the hospital was moved up there. This particular building that we're sitting in right now, this was started in 1910, and it opened as a industrial school, which is, you know, what the residential schools were called at the time. This particular building opened in 1912, and it stayed as a residential school until 1970.
Really, that long, eh?
Yes. And I was here as a student from 1956 till 1965.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. I know, it seems kind of weird, doesn't it?
Well,
sitting in here now that it's,
I would think so.
But, you know, for us, it's this is what we wanted to do with this building. It's the story behind what we did and why we did it is a very important story, and
mm-hmm,
I think that's partly why you're here.
Yeah.
You want to hear that story. The school ran from 1912 to 1970 as a residential school,
yeah,
as an industrial school and then residential school.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it was run by the Oblates of Mary Immaculate, were the priests and the brothers here, and the Sisters of Charity. Now, when I was here, I came in as a student in 1956. I was 6 years old, and I stayed here till 1965. And so I pretty much grew up here. There were, at the time that I was here, there were about 150 students, most years. And it was pretty evenly split between boys and girls, 75
mm-hmm,
boys, 75 girls. And so we had kind of three sections. We had the juniors, intermediates, and seniors that went up to grade 8. The classes went up to grade 8. So from grade 1 to grade 8, was the schooling that I got here.
When this first opened as a hotel, what was going on in your mind as a former student?
I
must have had all kinds of things going through your head.
Actually, I wrote a piece for the Healing Foundation, and that's where I start, is that I'm standing on the front steps, but I'm standing there as a grandmother watching my granddaughter help cut the ribbon with our Delta Hotels senior manager. They're here.
Isn't that
to
something,
cut the ribbon. And, you know, I talk about how I looked down the alley of trees and down, you know, that walkway, and thought about, you know, all those years ago, when I walked up that same walkway, you know, as a little 6 year old, and you know, quite frankly, at the time I was quite excited because my mother told me I was going to school, and she bought me some new clothes and new shoes, and you know, so I was pretty excited. But as we're getting closer, and I see the nun standing at the top of the steps, and then I realize what's really happening here.
Mm.
And then I watch my mother leave, and that was really hard.
Oh,
and there were, and then of course there are a lot of other kids around, and they're, you know, all the kids are crying, and I think you know, a real difficult part is watching the brothers and sisters being separated. You know, so the boys had to go one way and the girls the other way. And then through the whole time, the 10 months that we're here, that you can't speak to your siblings. In my case, I'm an only child, so that that wasn't, you know, something that I lived through. But I know what it was like, because my best friend, she had brothers. And even for when we're juniors, you know, when you see the kids my age, couldn't interact with their, you know, like if they're hurt, and their older sister tried to, or an older cousin tried to, you know, console the child, that was a no-no. Like, you would be quite severely punished for that. You stayed within, like, that's why I mentioned that there were three sections, junior, intermediate, senior. So the juniors, we looked after each other, as opposed to even if you had an older sister.
They're the original steps.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, they've been fixed up.
Yeah, but obviously, so they're safe to walk on.
But they're, yeah, that's the way the steps have always been. We didn't change that part of the building.
That's great. I'm glad you didn't. Because like I said, when we first, before we started this, when we were chatting, I couldn't help but think how many children's footsteps were going up those steps for the first time, and what was going on in their minds. And I mean, you can't help but think that. At least I can't when you first arrive here,
of course,
right?
Yeah. And you know, that's the thing, is that we're not hiding this. We're not trying to change the history. This building was a residential school.
Yeah.
And Canada's history, in terms of its history with Indigenous people, you know, we need to recognize that and accept the truth. You know, you hear a lot about, people are always talking about reconciliation. You're not going to have reconciliation if you don't first deal with the truth. Now, that's what we've built here. This is the truth. This was a former residential school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our choice as Indigenous people to take this back, to reclaim this, and then to turn it into something positive, so that people will never forget residential school, but they will also recognize that they're not going to keep us down there as victims forever.
No, yeah, it's a great way.
We can take this back, and we have, and we've created a good future for, you know, the generations to come. That was the words of our elder when we were in a meeting and we were talking about how much we had lost. This was in the 70s, and we were talking about, we're wanting to revitalize the Ktunaxa language. That's why I mentioned it's an isolate.
Mm-hmm.
If the Ktunaxa language is lost, it's lost to the planet. We lose the Ktunaxa language, it's gone forever.
Yeah.
So we were talking about that, and we were realizing that we had to do something because we were losing our elders.
Mm-hmm.
We were losing our language speakers. So we were talking about that, and all of us were blaming this place. And finally, Mary Paul said, look at, if you think you lost so much in that building, go back in there and get it. This was already becoming very decrepit.
Mm-hmm.
It had been shut down. Mm-hmm. You know, by the time she told us this, it had been shut down for, you know, at least a half a dozen years. You know, it was getting just more and more deteriorated, to the point where in the 90s, we realized that if we were going to do something with the building, we had to do it then. So we started putting together our plans. We knew that we needed to build something that was going to become self-sufficient. You know, we had a lot of ideas. People wanted to, you know, thinking about keeping it as a school, or mm-hmm. keeping it as some kind of health facility, or like some social use for it.
Mm-hmm.
But that, we knew, would always demand support from government, and we're not, like, that's not what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
So that's why we just took this giant leap. And I recall when we were going around with our business plan, like, you know, some of the people that we talked to, they would say, a former who would want to stay in a former residential school? Like, seriously? Plus, we're off the beaten track.
Yeah.
You know, we're not on any major highway.
Yeah.
We do have an airport, you know, that's very close to us here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was those words of our elder. And I think that as we started to plan this, We spent 2 years of what I call internal marketing. We spent 2 years talking with our people mm-hmm. about what we would do with this building. We had those, you know, particularly of my generation, who wanted to just knock it down,
yeah,
you know, get it off the face of the earth because they were hurt so bad here. But we had more people who were saying, we can make it into something positive. It's a building. It's actually quite an impressive building.
It is actually. It's
And we could do something with it, and we could make it so that nobody will ever. I mean, if we knock it down, then we'll come to a time when generations will have no recollection. Whereas what we've done here, you come here and it's a beautiful hotel.
Yes.
But it has a history. And, you know, like all old buildings, you know, people are interested in history.
Yeah.
And again, this is where we always will tell the truth of what happened.
Yeah, you've done a nice, I used the word monument when we were chatting previously. You've done a nice job of balancing it because there's little reminders, there's images, there's photos, there's, you know, I mean, the brick wall is definitely a reminder.
Yeah.
Yes. But it's also a place where you don't want to, you know, bring people down. Like, you want people come here for weddings and celebrations, and you have the beautiful golf course, and it is surrounded by beautiful. Like I say, you've done a great job. It is beautiful. The rooms are great. You have a beautiful golf course. What do you think the past students that are no longer with us here are thinking about this place, looking down?
I mean, I went to school with a lot of them who died very young. And I believe that had they been in my position, they would have done the same thing. They would have wanted to take it back. They would not have, you know, I know the spirit of all those beautiful children, and they would not have been wanted to be beaten down and seen as some kind of victim.
Yeah.
They would have wanted to take it back too, because that's what we've done. We've taken it back.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful place. Yeah. Former Chief Sophie Pierre of the Occam First Nation, now board chair for the St. Eugene Golf Resort and Casino. StEugene.ca is the website. It was such a pleasure chatting with you. Well, as we mentioned, we took a short road trip to Cranbrook, BC last week, and part of our visit was a stop at the Cranbrook History Centre, where we took one of their three historic railway tours, the Trans-Canada. Our tour guide was Natalie Lim Picard, programming coordinator for the Cranbrook History Centre. She did a fabulous job, and we had a great conversation with her after the tour about the history of Cranbrook and visiting the centre itself. So here's that for you now. Let's talk about, in general, I'm going to say this, I really don't know the history of Cranbrook, so you can probably teach me a lot, but in the time that we have, just give me a general overview about Cranbrook and the history behind it, how it got where it is today.
Yeah, so I'd say that Cranbrook's history in many ways reflects a lot of history, especially out west, with the arrival of the trains and the CPR really being the catalyst for the growth of this town. I'd say that the thing about Cranbrook's history that really stands out is the fact that Cranbrook wasn't kind of set out in the early years to be the main community area in this region in the East Kootenays. Fort Steele, well known for the Fort Steele Heritage Site, in the 1860s was really set out to be the main destination in the East Kootenays, and it was actually the bringing of the railroad here into Cranbrook in 1898 when the resident at the time, the main resident, Colonel Baker, was able to convince the CPR to build the railroad in this little valley that was called Joseph's Prairie at the time. And once the rails were set, once that station was built, it was basically no luck for Fort Steele. All the businesses wanted to come here. Everybody knew that the opportunities that would be growing from that point forward would be coming out of the rails. And so from that point forward, 1898, Cranbrook just grew and grew. We were incorporated in 1905. and it continues to grow.
Yeah.
I would like to mention that before Colonel Baker arrived in Cranbrook and the town grew based on the railway, there were the Tanaha who were living in this mm-hmm. territory. And they were living here, particularly the St. Mary's Band, Akam, for tens of thousands of years. And this land is what they used, particularly where Cranbrook is today, for the grazing of their animals. And when the railway came, it was a huge disruption in the way of life that they had.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a fascinating history. There's a lot of things you can see here at the Cranbrook History Center. I don't want to call it a railway museum because there's more to it. That's a big part of it, which we'll discuss, mm-hmm. but it is more than a railway museum because some people will call it that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's tricky, particularly because our name used to include railway in it, but we've since changed our name to reflect the larger goals of the museum, and we really want to serve our community. Mm-hmm. So we want to prioritize telling the stories, the history that is based in Cranbrook. And sometimes that can be, natural history. It can be the history of logging in the area, mining, mm-hmm. The great elephant hunt of 1926 when an escaped elephant ran around town for a couple months. And then we also have paleontology. And this is something that really attracts the youngsters because we've got a really great collection of trilobite fossils, a couple dinosaur feet, footsteps, and it speaks to a much longer history in Cranbrook. 350 million years ago, we were all underwater, and
yeah.
It was just little trilobites crawling on what we now call home.
When you drive down this main road here, you mm-hmm. see a statue of an elephant. Is that what that refers
yes.
to?
Yeah, that's Cranbrook Ed. He's a very popular figure. He was the unofficial mascot of the Cranbrook Autumn Fair in 1926 because when the circus came to town,
uh-huh.
he got loose.
Oh my gosh.
And it took quite actually a bit of knowledge, particularly from the local Tanaha, to track him down because they
really?
Knew the land so well. Yeah.
That's amazing. I did not know that. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the railway tours you have here. There's three main tours that you mm-hmm. can do. You can go online, Cranbrook History Center, to get more information on times and things like that. But just run through basically what the three tours are.
Yeah, we try to have three tours that kind of talk about rail history in different ways so mm-hmm. that we can attract, all the different interests that people have as they come into the museum. We have a kind of general tour to start off. Our comparative tour looks at trains from across different eras mm-hmm. in the 20th century in Canada. And it also looks across class to kind of paint a picture of how rail travel changed in Canada, especially as society was changing
yeah.
and how that experience affected particularly train travel. Our second tour is the Trans-Canada Limited. Like the comparative, it's also 45 minutes. And that's actually a series of 10 train cars that originally traveled together from 1919 until 1931 that we painstakingly reassembled into that original format so we could tell the story of this train. It was called the Millionaire's Express. We look at what this luxury train looked like for travelers and the work of the people who were employed by the CPR to make it possible for the travelers to experience mm-hmm. that millionaire lifestyle. So those are our first two tours. Our third tour, the Sioux Spokane, hits closest to home. It was a train that ran through Cranbrook every day, 1907 until 1914. It's a set of wooden cars, so it really gets us a deep look at, rail history. How did rail travel look, over 100 years ago?
Uh-huh.
And why were these cars so important for our town and for connecting our town, really, with the world?
Yeah. Well, we did do the Trans-Canada tour. It was amazing. Like, I'm a rail person, so obviously I'm going to say that. But you learn a lot about, like you say, not just rail travel in Canada and then the millionaires train and how the rich and not necessarily famous, but how they travel, mm-hmm. but also the workers on board and the things that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a fascinating tour.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that one thing that we always like to keep in mind is that rail history is Canadian history.
Yeah.
Rail history is social history, it's labor history, it's immigration history. And when you really look at Canada, we couldn't tell the stories of Canadians without telling the stories of the railways,
mm-hmm.
for better or for worse.
Yeah, and I think for better, it really was, like mm-hmm. you were mentioning, and this is what you learned part of the tour, it's the fastest, at that time, the mm-hmm. fastest way to get across the continent. It mm-hmm. was faster than the rail system in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an impressive feat considering the little competition I think Canada and U.S. always has.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's the relationship between, and you mentioned the Indigenous peoples around here, what's the relationship between the History Center and the Indigenous people now? Like, do you really have are you kind of partners in how the history is told?
So the Tanaha have an amazing interpretive center at the St. Eugene Resort, just a 15-minute drive from Cranbrook, that they tell their story and, you know, over 10,000 years of history, well up into the 20th century, dealing with residential schools. St. Eugene used to be an Indian residential school in this area. And we're fortunate to have had, Tanaha speakers come for different events that we have and share their different stories, such as the origin story. And it's a partnership that we're always looking to continue to build up on, and making sure that we know the stories that we're telling and knowing the stories that that they themselves are telling in their own way.
Tell us about some of the programs, like for a visit here. You mentioned the rail tours. They're about 45 minutes long. That's part of it. You can tour the rest of the center. Mm-hmm. How long are you asking people to really soak in everything that's here? How long will that take?
It really depends if you're a reader. there's quite a number of panels for people who really want to kind of soak in everything. We also know that, especially with our paleontology collection, we have a model train actually display at the back of the museum, which is really popular with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So with the number of kids that come in, we've introduced scavenger hunt programs as well as kind of photo searches, I Spy style games around the museum that kids really enjoy. And actually, in addition to the three tours that we offer, we have a supplementary, what we call the toddler tour.
Okay.
Because sometimes kids just want to look. They don't want to listen to all the history we'd want to talk about. And so for toddler tours, we really try and hone in on the trains that excite toddlers the most,
you know,
the caboose, the engine, and get them inside and seeing what life was like on those.
Yeah, so you got something for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to spend the day in Cranbrook. Mm-hmm. Anything I missed you want to add?
In the summer, for anyone who's looking to spend summer weekend in Cranbrook, we always offer walking tours.
Oh, okay.
So it's something that's additionally done just in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
We delve into downtown Cranbrook history. This year we're doing both a downtown and a house history tour. We're always looking to develop new tours. And so if you're just coming to the museum, regardless of the season, take a look at our website, look at our events page, and see if you can tap into any other part of local history while you're here.
And you can see Ed the Elephant.
You can see Ed the Elephant.
Natalie Lim Picard is Programming Coordinator with the Cranbrook History Center. The website, as she mentioned, cranbrookhistorycenter.com. It was a great tour. I learned so much. Thank you so much, Natalie.
Thank you.
And that is this week's Informed Traveler podcast. Remember, this is the podcast version of the Informed Traveler radio show, heard each week on Chorus Radio. You can find more information on the show at our website at theinformedtraveler.ca. So thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, let us know. Leave us a review. Tell a friend. And if you want to drop me a line, my email is randy@theinformedtraveler.ca. You can also like us on Facebook at facebook.com/informedtraveler. Or you can follow me on Twitter at informedtraveler.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.